Speaking on step 10, which is continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. So Tom, we'd like to hear what you have to say.
You show up every week.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tom Hoffman. I'm an alcoholic. And if I live till July 5th, I'll have 47 years of continuous sobriety. And I got to admit something. I did whatever I did last week and said, boy, I got Friday until Monday to get this thing put together for this week. Last week it was two steps, and I procrastinated. And I'm pretty well convinced all of us alcoholics are procrastinators. I started this morning to pull out things, and I have to be ashamed because my memory is shorter than that. And God love them, I got going, I got things written down and all this and that, and somebody come in the back door, here's my grandson. And he's a teacher now, he's 25, 26, but I dropped everything, and I will for those kids. They're just beautiful to me because of the way they do that. Not many grandpas have their grandson walk in the back door and say, hi, Grandpa, what are you doing? And these guys do, and it's real, real important to me. So let us hope I get through something that makes sense for you. I can't believe myself. I'm sorry, I really am. What I'm going to work on tonight is taking a personal inventory and when we're wrong, promptly admit it. When I started going back and forth through all this, these steps, the word personal caught me. And then I looked back to step 4 and they talk about a moral inventory. And then 8 is kind of personal, but they don't use the word personal. And then 9, it is personal. And I thought, what the heck is the difference between all that stuff? So back I went to reading it. And I guess it makes sense if 4-step is stuff you can collect right away. And I do believe that it's until the 8th step that you've got your mind pretty much together and you can get down to the nitty-gritty of things after reading what all goes into it. So this has really been an adventure for me, much more so than I thought it would be. You'd think after 47 years, I'd have something real juicy to say and this would be over with. And it's not going to work that way, folks, not tonight. But I made a note, and I only made it because I don't use them often enough, but the promises are on page 83 and 84 in a big book. And I heard the promises talked about before, but I never said where the hell it was. So now you know. And if you need it, give me a call. But the end of the promises say, we will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. And I certainly do believe that. And then we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. And I'm sure you've been paying attention to me these past few weeks. My faith is pretty good. And I do use use that a lot to keep myself, my hearing aid in, to keep myself on the beam. I really do. I've got a little novena. I go in the morning with Padre Pio, and it just things like that that to me are very important. And consequently, any decisions I make have a lot of, well, God, what do you think, stuff in it. And normally I'm wrong, he's right, and it just goes that way. But I'm from an Irish mother and a German father. We lived in Marvintown. I have two brothers and two sisters. One sister's passed away. And then Carol and I will be married 60 years this coming January 27th. And we've had three boys. They're up and grown and married and divorced and all those things that go on in today's world. But they've produced some fine sons, and I've got some fine sons. They're great. The woman just dropped me off. And I get kind of embarrassed because what the hell, I can drive, but the wife doesn't want me to. So until I get my bang up parts put together. Through our marriage, we were married in 62, I don't know, somewhere around there. And we had a fine thing going for us for 10 years or whatever. But suddenly the disease was creeping up on me and I didn't know what was going on. And thank goodness for my wife, because she was patient and she still is patient. Although we did have a break in the marriage for a little while, but she convinced our family doctor to get me in the hospital and check me out. And she knew I was a drunk, but and he knew I was a drunk, but I didn't know. So a week in there, a session with a psychiatrist who I went in and sat down in front of, and he said, "I see you did some damage to your liver." Well, what the hell does this guy know about my liver? He's a psychiatrist. But I did. That had happened. And that was kind of the beginning of making my head go around and say, wait, something's wrong here. Went back to Dr. Amaker, and he said, you don't have any health problems. He said, you got a drinking problem. And you have to do something about it. So I did, in time. But I didn't do it right away. I come out of that hospital after a week of being dry. Felt wonderful. But then it crept back in, and it stayed in for a while. Back then, the Mead family owned the Times, and they had an article every day, really, a listing of all the Alcoholics Anonymous meetings that were in town. And they had the phone number for the answering service. So it took a while, but I got into that number, and by then, marriage was getting kind of rocky. But I went in, and actually it was in January of 74. And, I hitched right onto the sled and kept going until July, when I thought I'd be smarter than the other guys, I don't know. But I was painting the outside of her grandfather's house, and our wine barrels were down in the basement, so I went down and took a pint mason jar and filled it up and went up, and now this is July 4th. And went back up on that ladder, and I was sweating like a pig. It was too hot, and you don't drink wine on a hot day like that. So I went ambling up the street. We lived down the street from her mother and grandparents. And passed out, really, on my son's bed. And again, I say to you that my wife was patient and good to me. She had to have loved me, because I'd have kicked my ass out. But I laid out, passed out on the bed. She called Bob, my sponsor, my original sponsor, and asked him what to do. She said, take his 24-hour book, put it on the table next to him, and put the glass of wine on top of it. Just leave him alone. Well, it was enough for me to remember 47 years later, because it was an impressive move. But from that point on, I began my troubles down here with the program. Uh, You know, as I go through this, he's up to the step 10, I've got to think back as to how I actually handled these steps. Because after all this time, I'm not sure what the heck I did. But slowly but surely, Bob and I had an arrival or whatever. That very first day I saw him, he talked to me for about an hour, and then he let me talk for about an hour and tell him what I did, what I didn't do, yada, yada, yada. Thus, there's a lot of stuff that come out of me at that point. As we went along, a couple things that happened. I did stay in touch with him every night. That was very important to me to have contact with Bob. Now, I had an ulterior motive to that, I shouldn't admit, but I sat in the living room, my wife is in bed in the bedroom, and I talked as loud as I could so I'd make sure she heard it. And it was, although it was nothing bad, it was just enough to let her know that I was doing something. And Bob would, his way of getting me to talk was to take me to a meeting out in the country. So I went to Wesleyville, or not Wesleyville, Edinburgh and Wattsburg, Waterford. And slowly but surely, these steps started dripping out. Then we went to a retreat up in Derby. This had to be the next year, in May. And a lot come out of my system then. And that's where I can understand what they're talking about now about the moral inventory. Because that was a lot of what I got out of me. And it was real important for me to do that on the fifth step with Father Atkins. And I, God love him, he's an old Irishman, member of the program. And he was the one that told us that, what was the word he used? That I can control it. He says, I'll give you a dose of salt. You go to Chicago in the car without opening the car door. And meaning Epsom salt. You'd best make a mess. But God love him, he got into us, and he had a bunch of nice talks. And my spirituality cultivated itself a little bit more with being able to talk to him. And the situation at home, that Irish, Ken Clunch. Is that who you are?
Yeah.
Okay, Ken. I thought, I know that man. Now I lost my... I'm sorry, Ken. Good to see you. we did a lot of discussion at the retreat and with Bob later. And as time went on, my wife had it up to here with me because she had all along been having some issues with me. And finally, one night at the club, an alderman, served me papers. And I was so damn mad, because I don't think rationally sometimes. And fortunately, the good Lord put me in the position where I was able to move in with a friend, and we were able to cultivate our sobriety that way with a lot of association at the club. And our life went on. And it went on for, I don't know how long it went. I just remember we decided I should come home. So I did, and I've been there ever since. We've had our ups and downs. I just told Jerome I've been sick for a year, or 2 years. And I've lost 100 pounds, and my wife has stuck right with me all along here. So I'm getting away from this step 10. But My point at that time was to let everybody know that she stuck with me hard and heavy to a guy that really created some havoc in her life that she didn't need. And when I did my fourth and fifth step, I did have that moral vein to it, if you want to call it that. And so I was touching the edges of things. I wasn't getting deep into there. But I did it and went through it and got rid of those little things that just were bothersome. There was nothing big to it. Yet all along there came one or two incidents that had to have some major talk. And as I look at all this, I'm saying, no, that happened in the eighth step. Because I didn't hide it, but I didn't bring it out in the fourth step. And those were kind of personal things that I felt was important to be brought out. And we hashed them over. By that time, Jerry and I had met, and I met another gentleman, Jack Seib. And between Jack, Jerry, and living with this fellow I moved in with, I got a lot of ironing out of all the wrinkles that came with the program, especially with me. I was able to talk freely to them, and they were not timid at all about telling me where the bear shit in the buckwheat. So it was a good association, and it worked well. But to me, that's the good Lord in his own little way saying, well, here goes Hoffman, you're on your way. So I, as I looked at this 10th step and looked back at what notes I had written and everything else this morning, I could see that as I progressed in my way down the steps, by the time I got to 8, I was pretty well settled on what was right and what was wrong and what I did right and what I didn't do right. So it did. It is progressive, it seems, yet intertwined with each other. I got to, what do I want to say, the 9th step, I think. I made a list of all, no, that's the 8th. Made direct amends on the 9th. And I don't know as I made too big of a list, but I had a list. And my feat was to make direct amends to those I hurt. Now that's where you jump from moral to personal, I guess. Because some of those things that I did are nothing I'm going to tell you about. But they were intense to a degree. And yet I had the freedom and the friendship that I needed to give that away and get off of my shoulders. And by that time in the program, I needed that. I needed someone who would listen and could listen and say, well, Tom, you did this wrong, but what are we going to do? And it worked nicely. It's again why my faith, I think, is pretty strong, because I can get very philosophical about something like that and look back and say, jeepers creepers, somebody pushed me that way. And to me, it had to be the good Lord. So that's how much of my program went and still goes. I have not been as active as I could be in the past 2 years, because that sickness took me into the hospital, Jesus, I don't know how many times. Many, many, many times. And it was one different thing after another. It was a pacemaker, it was a vein. I could go on forever. But what it did to me was push me away from, not push me away, I just couldn't get out to get to a meeting. I had cares at home and in the nursing home and in the hospital. So unfortunately for me, I had a period of stopping my growth in the fellowship. And even at 47 years, you need to grow. I do. I can see it from all I've gone through with trying to put this travesty together for tonight, because it was a hurry-up situation. I had to squeeze that grandson in there. Those guys don't know anything about me in this part of my life. I often wondered how Jim Britton kept it from his kids, because he did. And I think, how the hell do you do that? But as I look back now, there was no need to have a conversation about it, so we didn't. And when my two oldest ones were alive and active, not alive, were active in the program, they had a real nice Alateen program for the kids, and they got really tight in that. And those two and Beverly's daughters got involved in that thing, and they really progressed. They really had some good thinking and good stuff going for them. So they did understand me and did know what was going on. Matthew, my youngest, is a Marine, and Marines don't do stuff like that, I guess. I don't know. But he never went into any of that with me, although he did listen to the first talk. He's out in California, and I encouraged him to listen, and he was in tears by the time he was done. I didn't think I said anything that bad, but I guess it's that dad-son stuff. But those kids and my kids are real, real important to me, and I'll do anything. I'll stop and screw up a lead before I'll mess up that thing with my son, my grandsons. I like to tell the story that on my wife is runs a religious education program at St. Andrew's, and those guys weren't getting church, so she said, "Well, look, I'll have them down here on Saturdays and they can get PSR, whatever they call that thing." And in order to make it inviting for them, I guess you'd call it, I said, "Okay, I'll take them home and then I'll take them to lunch every Saturday," and I did. I built a bond that you couldn't break with a sledgehammer with those guys. It was just beautiful, and still is, because Zach came in today with his little cup of coffee in hand, and we talked about everything and anything. His brother, his twin brother, calls us from Florida. So that stuff is real, real, real important to me. And it's a live part of my... I suppose making amends, but it certainly isn't intentional that I'm making amends. It's I'm being a grandpa, and that's what I want to be. Not, I don't want to be an older. But that's kind of where that stuff went. The damn clock's going too slow. You can see I highlighted a few things in here. This is 12 and 12. And they were just blurbs of things that that came out at me. One of them was, few people have been more victimized by resentments than we alcoholics. A burst of temper could spoil a day, and a well-nursed grudge could make us miserable, miserably ineffective. Nor were we ever skillful in separating justice from injustice. And that lit a little fire for me, because it brought up some memories that I really didn't like to hash out. But again, to me, it's the good Lord saying, "Okay, here, you're doing your 10th step. What are you doing for the night?" And that was something that was, and quite often is, my goal in the evening, is to get that 10th step in. And it's kind of a real relaxing thing for me to sit back and go over my day and see what I did right and what I did wrong. You do a lot right, but it was that progression from the first step to the 10th that got me to the point where I would take the time to use the 10th step. When I first come in, I was busy yakking here and yakking there, and I was Mr. What the hell I thought it was, but I was fortunate enough to have Jack take me up to St. Vincent's, and we worked a 6 o'clock meeting at St. Vincent's at the, to our north. Every 10 days he went up, so I went up with him. And it wasn't long before he had let me talk and stuff like that, which, of course, stabbed my ego like hell, but I don't know how much I got across, but it did free me up. Then we got into Serenity West and the same type of thing, where I was permitted to talk, and yet everybody was saying, you don't talk for me here, but I guess I was sneaking them in. And that wasn't a lead, it was just a conversation, really, with these folks. But my brain goes, okay, let's try this. A spot check inventory taken in the midst of such disturbances can be a very great help in quieting stormy emotions. The consideration of long-standing difficulties had better be postponed until possible, when it's possible. And I interpret that to mean stick with the fourth step until you get to the 10th step, and by then you'll know what the hell you're talking about. And that's almost true. If I wasn't so forgetful, I would be. But that's the reason I highlighted that. A quick inventory is aimed at our daily ups and downs, especially those where people or new events throw us off balance and tempt us to make mistakes. I think any temptation to me really was intense in that first maybe 3 years, that I would have a thought of saying the hell with it all, or not pursuing this and not pursuing that, because I had a bevy of guys around me, and when we separated, I was mad as hell, but it was probably the best thing for us, because it gave us a chance to roll along with some great people from AA. And Jim and I were almost daily at the club. Things like that that really cultivate sobriety, honesty, and all that stuff. So I'm real grateful for that introduction, if you want to call it that. But after 3 years, I don't know as I had that strong of a drive to have a drink. But nonetheless, once in a while it was there. Now I'm so far along, I'd be crucified by my grandson. But that's kind of me. One unkind tirade or one willful snap judgment can ruin our relation with another person for a whole day or maybe a whole year. Nothing pays off like restraint of tongue and pen. And I can be brutal with a pen. Not so much with a language, but I can be brutal. And this afternoon was a good example of prudence in my part. Zach is in a play. I had to hear all about that and how his teaching was going and all that stuff. And as I sat and listened, I said, no, you're a grandpa. You don't dare interrupt him. And I didn't. But had I been of a different nature 40-some years ago, all hell would have broke loose, because I just had no good, sensible judgment when I made, when I talked to my kids. Again, though, the ultimate purpose was to be a grandfather. Not anything else. And it's working. So when you're ready, you try it. Funny thing happened not a funny thing, not an unusual thing, but just to show you where my faith is sometimes at. We had a bingo kitchen at St. Andrews, where I went over this before. But had all my family there. They were all baking or cooking or serving or whatever. I gave everybody $10, and I ended up with $5. But it was fun. It was family. It was us together. That was important. Afterwards, we come down to the house, and I thought, gee, I can remember when my aunt and uncle were, and I was young, that we all sat around and said the rosary. We listened to the radio, and you said the rosary. So I said, come on, kids, let's do that. For the longest time, we said the rosary. They weren't insulted, they weren't hurt, but it was an important thing for me to do that. And it brought together a little bit of family. Thus, I was satisfied with that. Making amends has been a long, hard struggle, and yet the longer I go along, the easier it is to do that. I'm so damn forgetful that if I don't say now what's wrong, tomorrow I've forgotten, and they still think I'm a dope. So I tend now to say it, get it over with, and I forget it, and when you bring it up in a conversation, it's gone. So that's just the way my life has worked. And I don't have that many regrets anymore of things I have done, either to my wife or my children or my sisters or brothers or anybody. I guess sitting back and keeping your mouth shut for a few years is beneficial, because they all respect me, they all love me. But it's been a great ride so far. Okay. Someone who knew what he was talking about once remarked that pain was the touchstone of all spiritual progress. How heartily we AAs can agree with him, for we know the pains of drinking had to come before sobriety, and emotional turmoil before serenity. I went through a lot of physical stuff, and even more emotional stuff. At home, though, there's not much with the outside world. But as you heard a few minutes ago, it was a home scene that was disrupted. And yet, all of that disruption and all of this discussion here and there became very important to what we are today. We've got a good conversational period, and as I say, my boys, I are priceless. Just priceless. So all of that 10, 12 steps in a man's lifetime can really be a benefit if you use it right. Now, it took me a few years to use it right. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not this man with a quota of wisdom. But we've reached a point now where not much explodes at all. We've got a very comfortable life. I'm not a rich man, but I'm comfortable. Get mad at the wife once in a while when she doesn't want to go to the casino, but other than that, why, I'm fine. But the whole program has done so much for my life. It's hard not to see that. Self-righteousness can underline the smallest act or thought. Learning daily to spot, admit, and correct these flaws is the essence of character building and good living. An honest regret for harms done, a genuine gratitude for blessings received, and a willingness to try for better things tomorrow will be the permanent assets we shall seek. And I think I've sought them, and I've got most of them. All because I'm part of a program that forces me into looking hard at Tom Hoffman. And even after 46 years, it's intense, because it can be. I can be a dope, and I got better words than that, but I can just be that way, and I don't want to. I don't want to. And you guys have taught me how not to. So that was kind of the important thing. But I'm going to wrap it up before my mouth just dries right out.
All right.
Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome.
So now we have some time for questions with our speaker. If you're on Zoom and you have a question, just go ahead and unmute yourself and speak up. If you're here in the room and you have a question, raise your hand and we'll get you the microphone. So who would like to get us started?
Go ahead, Cindy, say something.
Oh, Tom, it's just good to hear you and see you up and about, because we really missed you at the Wednesday night meeting before we moved, because with all your hospitalizations. And thank you so much for sharing your life with us.
Thank you for being here tonight. That's great. Good to see you.
Who else has a question for Tom?
I'm Patrick. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Patrick.
Tom, when you've mentioned going to see the doctor, the psychiatrist, and it sounds like that was like maybe the 60s or early 70s, and they were talking to you about your drinking problem and you had to do something about it. What do you recall what your impression was of what the doctors thought about alcoholism? In other words, did they think it was like a disease that you could do something about, or did they think it was like a mental illness, or do you recall what you thought they thought about it? I know this isn't really about step 10, but it just occurred to me.
I don't recall exactly what went on as far as his judgment was concerned. I would tend to say that he was focused more on it being a disease and working with it. But he listened well, and I talked well. I didn't hold back. So I had a lot of comfort in knowing that that I had been honest with him. Now all he had to do was be honest with me. And it didn't matter the topic or the subject or whatever. I laid all my cards face up. If anything, my sponsor told me, he says, you've got to play it with your cards face up. And again, that was another important thing that my sponsor gave to me. As far as, it was Dr. Clapp, who was, I always get a kick out of that name. But he was easygoing and understanding, and once I got this yapper going, why, there was no stopping me, so we did accomplish a lot in a very short time. In addition to that, there was periods of, not that many, but we had marriage counseling too, it was in the middle of some of that. But I would say he treated it more like a disease than anything. But in the 60s, what the hell did they know?
Yeah. Sounds like he was ahead of his time.
Yeah.
Oh, hi, Tom. Hi. Thanks for working step 10 tonight and talking about it, but I have a question. The part of the step 10 that says, when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I keep skipping over that word, promptly. When you first came in and you were doing the steps, did you find that a problem for you to hold back that apology, to maybe negate the seriousness of it? Because I know sometimes it'll ruin my heart for a few days when I don't apologize. But for some odd reason, there's that little thinking that keeps me from apologizing immediately. Do you ever have that problem?
You know, after 40-some years, my salvation was here. I forget now where the hell that's at. There it is. The consideration of long-standing difficulties had better be postponed when possible. And that told me that if it's something that's tough, I can hold it off until I'm at the right mind. And I do. Whether it's embarrassment or no guts or whatever you want to call it, I do put it off. And but it comes back. It does. It comes back to me. I told you one time that Bev and I, and we were real close when she first came in, used to talk and talk and talk. Another part of my program when it was early. And we'd talk until we decided, no, we'll hold it off until tomorrow. And if it came back tomorrow, we'd do something about it. And we'd discuss it the next day. And most often it just went away. Now that's an issue, not kind of talking what you're talking about, because you're talking a little more personal, but that's a personal part. But no, I do put it off. Some forever.
Thank you.
Go ahead. You're welcome.
Hi, I'm Nadine. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Nadine.
Thank you, Tom, for sharing. When you were sharing, you were talking about the moral inventory and the actions you took to proceed then to step 10. And in the big book, it talks about that design for living, that this program gives us a design for living. Would you say that step 10 is the introduction to the design of living for you? And then, obviously the further steps do it. But do you think that's the beginning of the design because we've done all that work?
You know, I never looked at that in that way, but I think you've got a real valid point. Because the first nine steps are almost separate from the last three tens, or three tens. But I never looked at it. I would really have to sit back and think hard on that, because I was kind of regimented up until 10, the more I think back, where I'm over alcohol and I've done my fourth step and my fifth step, but it was 1, 2, 3, and I suppose by 10 I was ready to discuss it a little bit further. I don't remember it distinctly, but that's probably what I did. Okay, that answer your question? Thank you, Nadine.
Anyone else have a question for Tom?
Of course.
Oh, for goodness sake.
I just like to hear my voice.
Get your recording.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks again, Tom. Just have a quick question about you. When you were talking, you talked about how you review your day and how you evaluate your program or your life or what you need to do or what you'd like to change or anything like that. Do you have like a regular routine that you do, or is it just kind of spontaneous?
Well, it starts off spontaneous. However, as nutsy as it may seem, I was raised by a bunch of St. Joseph nuns who are real trouble when you're young.
Still are.
However, I often say to myself, you know, Tom, you're lucky you're Catholic. Now, I don't know what a Lutheran does or Baptist or whatever they do. When they say pray, what do they do? I've got the Hail Mary, the Our Father, the Glory Be. I've got all those things I can rattle off in a second. Isn't that the dumbest thought? But it does go through my mind. They've all got it figured out, I'm sure. So my review of the day goes on, and then I throw in a few prayers that I know. So that's a backward way to get around to your answer. But,
thanks, Tom.
Sounds good?
Yeah.
You can make...
Any last questions? All right. Well, thank you, Tom.
Thank you. I'm going to do the next two.